And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. How are you all keeping this Wednesday morning, looking at the small bit of daylight that I can see from the studio, and it's another beautiful, calm, clear day, and I hope you are able to enjoy it, whether it's the commute to work or if you're at home or that your health is well enough. You know yourself, it can be a bit of a drag if you're not feeling well, regardless of the weather. But I hope you're feeling good and you're welcome to stay with us. In fact, I insist you stay with us for the next 3 hours here on the 9 till noon show and throughout the day on Highland Radio. 086 60 25,000 is the number if you want to get in contact with us, raise your issues or comment on what we've got lined up for you. You can ring Caroline as well on 074 91 25,000, or if you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com, and feel free if you're listening on the podcast or overnight to email or text your views. We can pick them up and bring them to the wider audience the following morning. And if you want to watch the show, we're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, which means you can watch on your smart TV or Fire Stick. We're on the X platform at Highland Radio and across Facebook as well. Let's look at the papers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice reports lower rents in Donegal, but lower wages too. First, the good news, you can get a home in Donegal for less than €1,000 per month rental, almost 1,200 less than the same home would cost in Dublin. Now, the bad news, the average monthly wage in Donegal is over 1,000 less than it is in Dublin. That's most of the savings wiped out right away. But for working married couples, it returns as a loss of hundreds of euros. You can read more of that analysis in that paper today. On to the Irish Times now, and this is a remarkable story, this one. Hezbollah vows revenge for pager explosions. At least 9 people were killed and more than 2,750 wounded, many seriously, yesterday afternoon when pagers carried by Hezbollah militants exploded across Lebanon and Syria. They had explosives in them, and however they managed it to manufacture them with explosives, get them into the hands and pockets of Hezbollah militants and then detonate them all simultaneously. It's a story that will end up being a film of some sorts or other, I imagine. The explosions occurred simultaneously at 3:30 p.m. local time, concentrated in Hezbollah strongholds such as Beirut's Daik neighbourhood and also in Syria, with explosions reported in Damascus and elsewhere. Some of the injured were senior Hezbollah commanders, and Iran's ambassador to Lebanon was also slightly hurt, along with 2 of his bodyguards. Video footage showed explosions taking place on streets, in markets and inside shops, with scores of ambulance sirens blaring, arriving at local hospitals, which were soon overwhelmed. Lebanon's health minister told Reuters that some 400 people were in a critical condition, mainly with head, arm and stomach injuries. Lebanese residents were urged to avoid approach roads to hospitals and to donate blood. So, I mean, obviously now this is the first kind of action like this on this scale that we've kind of witnessed, I believe. I think anyone in that region carrying any electronic device might be nervous now. Hezbollah has blamed Israel. It didn't initially, but it has now, and has, as you can imagine, in the tit-for-tat that's ongoing over there, has promised revenge. But as I say, that story, I think, is going to become even more bizarre as more details are released. I don't know what you think about this one. It's a report in the Irish Independent. Stephen Donnelly, he's the health minister, of course, and he's pushing to expand free contraception to 16-year-olds as part of Budget 2025. Now, this is a little bit of a come left of field, because the age of consent is actually 17 in this country, and I'll read on, it'll point to that. So why would one reduce the age of free contraception to 16? It's explained in the article. Contraception is currently free for women aged 17 to 35 under measures brought in by the Fianna Fáil minister. However, there is resistance within the Department of Health for the initiative to extend to girls aged 16 due to medical ethics. This given that the age of consent in Ireland is 17. The minister is understood to be pushing back against the legally complex issue, as he believes free contraception should be made available to 16-year-old girls, as the state already provides abortion to girls of that age. So what do you think? I mean, is this a case that even though the age of consent is 17, maybe 16-year-olds and younger are partaking in acts that could lead to an unwanted pregnancy? So is it good that free contraception might be available to them? Or is it sort of disregarding the age of consent being 17 and might be seen as a green light by young people to engage in sexual activity? I don't know what the correct answer is. I'd be interested in polling the listeners of the Northwest. If you have a view on that, get in touch, 086 60 25,000. It's boring the hell out of me now, but it's extensively covered and not something we can ignore, and that is the funding of RTE, and this is in the Irish Daily Mail. Taoiseach Simon Harris has criticised suggestions from RTE that the TV licence model is outdated and should be replaced by a media charge. The government was targeted in July when it chose not to pursue scrapping the TV licence, a move advocated by Media Minister Catherine Martin and recommended by the Future of Media Commission report. And in its annual accounts for 23, published this week, RTE noted the TV licence model is becoming outdated and that a media charge is favoured in other jurisdictions. The scandal hit national broadcaster said that without a new public funding model, it will not be able to deliver its public service remit or move to a stable funding financial footing. But in an appointed response yesterday, Mr. Harris said the elected government of Ireland will make decisions in terms of how we fund services, not RTE. Let's be really clear. I understand the government's role and I understand RTE's role, and I'm sure they understand them as well. It's RTE's role to run the public service broadcasting, to do it in a responsible way, to get their act together quick, quite frankly. In terms of the financial situation, we're greatly helping them. Or we've greatly helped them. And when I say we, I mean the taxpayer of this country. We've helped because we value public service broadcasting. But he says ultimately, he does seem to tend to say the right thing to appeal to a lot of people. Fundamentally, he says it's the government decides it, not RTE. The Irish Daily Star this morning, disappointment for former Finance Minister Michael McGrath. I mean, obviously he was cherry-picked to be offered up as a commissioner in Europe, and the big push was to get him an influential role in finance. But unfortunately, he's I wonder how long he'll stick it. He's got quite a boring and uninfluential role in justice. But you do have to wonder why someone who's so eminently qualified, we're told, in terms of running a country's finances, what does he bring to justice? But anyway, for former Finance Minister Michael McGrath has been announced as EU Commissioner for Democracy, Justice and the Rule of Law. The announcement was made by Commission President Ursula von der Leyen yesterday. Mr. McGrath stood down as Finance Minister in June solely to put himself forward as Ireland's sole nomination for Commissioner. Ms. von der Leyen confirmed that he had been given the Democracy, Justice and Rule of Law Commission. It had been hoped in government circles that Mr. McGrath would receive a financial or economic portfolio due to his background as both the Finance Minister and Minister for Public Expenditure. Now, he's saying he's honoured and it's a great role. The government are also saying the same, but the reality is it's not an incredibly influential role, and it's the kind of role that until such time as he returns from Europe, you might not hear his name mentioned again because there's not much news comes out of that department. Staying with politics and in the Sun today, Micheál Martin, and not surprisingly, has ruled out a post-election coalition with Mary Lou McDonald Sinn Féin. And when I say not surprisingly, I don't really necessarily mean in terms of policies or what have you. It's really down to numbers and where his party's at, where Sinn Féin's at, and where he believes his party needs to be. The Taoiseach believes many voters would like to see the current government parties return to power. He's accused Sinn Féin and other parties on the left, such as People Before Profit, of falsely portraying Ireland as a failed state. He said, "I accept we have an awful lot more to do in certain areas, but I do not accept the narrative of a failed state." Mr. Martin said opposition to any alliance with Sinn Féin was not just his personal stance, but was a viewpoint held by the party more generally. Now, I know some senior representatives of Fianna Fáil in this county would have been in favour in the past of coalescing with Sinn Féin. I wonder, have their views changed as well? And sad news from the world of radio and local radio and people in similar positions to presenting a show like this. And it comes from LMFM. Award-winning radio host Michael Reed has revealed he is terminally ill with cancer. The 58-year-old broadcaster, who has been at LMFM covering Louth and Meath for 21 years, released a statement yesterday after being off the airwaves for 6 weeks. Michael, who is currently nominated for 2 IMRO Radio Awards, said, "Regular listeners to the station will probably know I have not been at work in over a month. I know some people listening would like to know why. Well, I am not known to stand on ceremony, so I will cut to the chase. I am not well. I'm actually very sick. I have cancer, and I'm afraid to say that my diagnosis is terminal. It's an illness, in other words, that I will not be able to recover from. Sounds awful, I know," he said, "but you know, I'm oddly okay with it. I have reconciled myself with the situation that I find myself in. I've accepted that I am facing into. I know what it means. I am not afraid. I'm not devastated." Which, powerful words, in fact, but we extend our thoughts to Michael Reed and his family and his radio family as well, who'd be very shocked by that news, and hope him the very best. Okay, yeah, we were talking to Lee about what's that skin called on the top of a rooster's head? They're wattles. So we appreciate someone who took the time to take their phone out of the pocket and let us know. Now, the show this week is being brought to you in association with Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Moville. And all this week, every day, we've a €200 voucher for Breeden's to give away. And it's been a really popular competition, so thanks to all of you who've been entering. And we're going down the same road again today, and we're asking you to rearrange a word to come up with an item you will be able to purchase in Breeden's. And the word today is Archie, A-R-C-H-I, Archie, A-R-C-H-I. So what everyday household item can you jumble those letters up and create? A-R-C-H-I. As I say, rearrange the letters, you come up with a standard household item, and you'll be able to buy plenty of these. There's a huge choice at Breeden's. So text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000, or WhatsApp it to be in with a chance to win this great €200 voucher prize. Okay, so one of the biggest issues in this county, in this country, of course, is housing. And this week in Lifford, a special housing meeting took place. Councillor Jimmy Brogan, independent, is with us now. He attended that meeting. Good morning, Councillor. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. All right, so you're of the view that every option needs to be on the table to address this housing crisis that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, well, listen, we need to consider everything, every option that's available to us. Like, you know, like I said at the last meeting, you know, there's lots of vacant houses out there, you know, and a lot of them could be brought back into use fairly quick, you know, houses around the countryside and the towns. Like, if you go through every village and town, you'll see houses vacant, like, you know, and old houses that haven't been used for years and years. And a lot of them, even in some villages, you see houses for sale. And the
All right, I've lost you, Jimmy, there. Just waiting for you to reconnect. We're chatting to Councillor Jimmy Brogan. It's off the back of a special housing meeting that took place in Lifford this week. We'll reconnect with Jimmy in a moment and we'll continue that conversation with him. You are there, Jimmy, are you?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry about that. Loud and clear. You've been pointing to the amount of vacant properties that are around the county. But, you know, as well as acquiring those, we also need to make it easier for people to build their own houses. And specific instant housing is one of those proposals you're coming up with.
Yeah, well, listen, it's nothing new. You know, SA houses have been built for years and years, you know. When I was young, I grew up in the countryside myself, you know, so I remember growing up to those houses, you know, here and there and everywhere, like, you know, SA houses, you know, a lot of my neighbours and friends grew up in SA houses, and it was a great way of getting housing built, you know. And there's a lot of people in rural areas that have a bit of land, you know, or their aunt or uncle might have a bit of land, or somebody belonging to them would have a bit of land that they could you know, and as long as the site's good, like a quarter of an acre, build you a house, you know. So as long as, you know, the site's in a good place, you know, and there's a lot of places where sites would be very easy to service as well, like, you know, because you'd have water running past the lane, or you'd have electricity close by, you know. So it's something we should be looking at. And like, I put in a motion to ask for more money to be given to the council for SA housing. But listen, what I was told, I was a bit surprised really, was that there was no interest in SA housing, you know. So that surprised me in a way, because I know there's plenty of people have been.
So there's a scheme there, but very few applications. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what I've been told. That's what I've been told. Now, like I say, it was a surprise to me because I think there's plenty of people out there that if they knew that was available again, because for years they weren't building SI houses. In fact, I've been working in Thomas Pringle's office for the past 12 years, and in the time, I know of one SI house that was built in South Donegal. Now, there might have been another one or two, but there wasn't many. And at the moment, there's one SI house, which is it's in the planning process at the moment, and it's hoped to get started soon. That's a very poor return on what could be a way of getting houses built for people. You know? And I just think people aren't aware that it's there, you know, that there's an option.
Yeah. And I think that the thing with the whole housing situation that I find, and maybe some of the listeners would be of the same view, is that, you know, we keep talking about the same things over and over again. You know, the level of dereliction, the level of vacancy, what we should be doing, you know, but we're not doing it. So, you know, even if someone says, right, there's €1 trillion of Apple money to build houses in Donegal, the question is how are they delivered? Where will they be delivered? How will we ensure we have the infrastructure to support the development of houses, either in towns or in more rural areas? You know what I mean? I feel like we're constantly identifying problems and maybe talking about some solutions, but it just comes down to when are we going to see these houses coming on track at a scale that's actually required?
Well, that's a good question, you know, and it's a question we've been asking. Like, really, it's up to the Department of Housing, really, to make sure that these houses are built. The council can identify sites and identify houses to be by, but, you know, they have to apply for the money then, like, you know, and, you know, listen, the government always say there's no shortage of money for housing, but, you know, that's just not what we see on the ground, you know. And, like, as well as that, too, I think the councillor, you know, they seem to concentrate on the larger towns, like Donegal Town or Ballyshannon, which is a massive housing need, you know, but there's no reason why people in Donegal Town, I'm sure a lot of people in Donegal Town that are on the housing list would move to Mount Charles or move to Lahey, you know, if those houses built there, you know. And you have villages like Mount Charles and Lahey and others, you know, right around the place, you know, that, you know, I'm sure if there was 20 or 30 houses built in Mount Charles, we would get 20 or 30 families to move into them, you know. They mightn't be on the list in Mount Charles at the moment, but they would definitely move there if the houses were available.
No, definitely. But in fact, it might be favourable given its lovely location but proximity to the likes of Donegal Town as well. But yeah, back to this SI scheme. So is that funded through the Department of Housing or for the council? And I wonder, like, is it open for applications then? Obviously, there hasn't been much of an uptake, and maybe people think it's something that their grandfather or father and mother, availed of.
Yeah, well, it's open for applications. The council said it was always open for applications, but it's just that for years they weren't funding these applications. Now, the Department of Housing didn't say they weren't funding them, but just that was the reality. You know, people were applying and then the funding wasn't available, so they were turned down. But as far as I know now, they're open for applications and there's money there available for them. As long as the site is in the right place. Now, it has to be a good site. You know, the council at the end of the day are taking over the land and it's going to be their house. So they don't want to build a house in an area that's you know, not fit for building, you know, because in years gone by, there was houses built in places that weren't great spots for building, you know. But if you have a good site, you know, then it's, you know, all you have to do is fill in the application. It's the same application, basically, as the housing application. The means assessment's the same. You can still get a HAP payment while you're waiting for your house to be built. So there's not much difference in it, really, only the fact that you're going to get the house built on your own land. Now, obviously, the council will own the house then over the years, people have bought out them houses, you know, which was traditionally well to think through. But listen, at the end of the day, that's up to the council if they decide to sell them or not, you know. But
sometimes it can be a little bit complicated because whilst the council own the house, that the owner's responsible for the upkeep, and it might not be for everyone. But you're opening up your office to assist.
It's the same with every council house. Okay. Really, you know, there's a certain amount that the council will do, but really it's up to the tenant to upkeep the house themselves, you know.
All right, and if anyone's interested in that scheme, you are inviting them to call your office. Just finally, having been at that meeting, and listen, there are, you know, units of housing coming on stream in certain parts of Donegal. Work is being done, but did you come out of that meeting with any optimism that, you know, we have plans or a will and the way, which is really important, to sort of start making more housing available, more social housing?
Yeah, well, there's plenty of housing being planned, you know, but the problem is it takes such a long time to get it to a place where somebody's going to move into it. You know, We have houses planned here in Killybegs.
All right, we've lost that connection there with Councillor Jimmy Brogan, but that was the end of the interview in any way, so you get a sense of what he's talking about. Interesting comment from a listener, and my heart goes out to them, and it reads as follows. Greg, I know when people say the word stepmother, it usually is with hate. I wouldn't say that, but I know exactly where you're coming from. But this listener says, I can only say those words with love. My stepmother is currently very ill and in the last few days of her life. When I checked how much compassionate leave I'd be entitled to, I was horrified to discover it was none. Surely blended families have moved on and step-parents should be treated the same as birth parents. You would imagine so, wouldn't you? I don't know where you would go to pursue that, but I would have thought that's a problem that's already been resolved. It's not, though. So this person, who's obviously very fond of their stepmother, the mother is terminally ill in the last days of her life, and we wish her all the best in that. But this caller says, surely blended families have moved on and step-parents should be treated the same as birth parents. What do you think? 0860 25000. I've been told there's a bad collision at New Mills entering Letterkenny. Traffic being diverted via back road. Approach with caution. And emergency services are on the scene at the moment. So I don't know how bad it is, if it's a material damage collision, but we'll obviously keep you updated on that. But just if you're approaching the New Mills area, entering Letterkenny, the traffic is being diverted via the back road. Approach with caution, and obviously these diversions can get very busy at times. They're not designed for it, but we need it when we need it. Emergency services have arrived there on the scene. Okay. Now, we welcome onto the programme Marie Houston. Hi, Marie. Thanks so much for speaking to us. I do appreciate it. How are you, and how's everyone in the family at the moment? Because as we'll talk about, she's just got the most shocking news recently, and it must feel like just a whirlwind of negative emotions sweeping through you all.
Yes, it certainly is, Greg. It's just our whole world's been kind of turned upside down, but we're getting there. We're definitely getting there, you know. It's just the shock of the whole thing, really, to be honest. But we're kind of at the... Well, she's up now today for her second bout of chemotherapy. They went away up yesterday, so this is going to be the new normality for us all for a while, I suppose, you know.
All right, we're talking about 6-year-old Ruby Houston, her parents Shawnee and Alana, and the whole family have just gone through everyone's worst nightmare, and it followed a recent trip to the emergency department. Marie, how did things unfold?
Well, basically, it was Tuesday 3 weeks ago. She was with her nana, like Alana's mum, and she couldn't kind of... She just said she couldn't walk. She couldn't get out of the bed. So they took her to A&E, but they kind of... It's funny in a way because, I mean, she lives half of the week with us and half the week with Alana. And I had just recently bought a treadmill for the garage, and herself and my niece's two children, Harley and Harley, who are like her sidekicks, they're basically like brothers and sister to her, you know, because she's here half the week and then she's got her other cousin down in Alana's home. But they were in the garage and they all wanted a shot on the treadmill, as you know the way. So basically that's what it was. So they were kind of... they thought then that maybe she had done something on the treadmill, and I was saying she definitely didn't. She was only on... I was only giving them 5 minutes each. They were... And I more wanted to do it than the man in the moon, Greg, but just to keep them happy, you know, that kind of way.
I know, exactly. As you say, as soon as that lands in the house and you've got kids of that age, it's the first thing that happens.
They all wanted a wee shot on it.
You stick it on at 1 kilometre per hour and let them just let them have a wee go and get it out of their system.
This is it. So there were three of them. So I gave them a few minutes each, and then I was doing a kind of Joe Wicks thing with them in the garage, you know, making them do star jumps. And that was it. That was basically it. And then... So basically, when they went to A&E, like Shawnee, who works in A&E, my son, like both Shawnee and Alana work in the hospital, which is great for them as well. He had rang and he said, she must have done something to herself in the treadmill. And I said, God, they definitely weren't on the treadmill long enough. But anyway, they were putting it down to basically that the groin had, you know, that she'd done something to her wee groin, that they were doing the wee bit of exercise or whatever, you know. So they just said she had to rest for a week. But before they left A&E, they called them back in to say that they saw something in her blood. So she had to go up to PEDS. And she was straight up to PEDS then. And then they said they would have to send the bloods away to Crumlin on the Wednesday morning by taxi, kind of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to have an ultrasound and down in Letterkenny and an x-ray, but she didn't actually get the x-ray because they saw something in the ultrasound. And then the bloods came back from Crumlin kind of confirming what it was, basically.
And it's a very aggressive form of cancer known as neuroblastoma. I don't know, I hadn't heard of this before, and maybe many of your family didn't either, Marie, but you become a quick learner in these situations. What kind of a cancer is it, Marie?
It's a childhood cancer. Like, I mean, it's very, very rare that you would get it after age 10. And basically, it's just... there's no way of kind of stopping this. If you know that it's not preventative, you know, that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but if you get it before the age of 5, there's a great, you know, there's a great positive way of dealing with. Just unfortunately, Ruby is 6, nearly 7, so she hers is more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically her treatment is going to be a lot more severe. But hopefully, please God, with the power of prayer and the power of the doctors and everyone that we're going to get. Look, at the start, it was just, we thought the whole world had ended, to be perfectly honest. But as days go on, you get stronger and you get more knowledgeable. And thankfully, Alana herself is a nurse and has been very, very good with the whole thing. You know, like she knows a good... obviously, doesn't know anything about this. This is all new to us all, basically. But it's great that you have some kind of medical knowledge, you know, the way. But so basically, at the end of the day, the way it is for them now, they've been told it's going to be a long, long, very hard road ahead for them. They both will not be at work for the foreseeable because of her aggressive treatment that she's getting. Like, she'll be getting chemotherapy now every 10 days for 80 days. And then hopefully, please God, the tumour will have reduced significantly for them to be able to remove it. After that, then she has radiotherapy. She has stem cell. Like, she has quite a few years now to be going up and down to Crumlin, you know. So it's...
And
just the fear of the unknown.
Yeah, of course it is. And understandably, Alana and Shawnee want to spend as much time with her on what's going to be a very, very long and hopefully ultimately a very successful journey. And to sort of support them in throwing all of their time behind Ruby's battle, a GoFundMe page was launched, and it had a very modest, I suppose, in the end, target of €10,000. And now is very close to €85,000. In sort of a where there doesn't seem to be any light, you know, and I know you've talked about things are improving a little bit now. It must have brought great comfort to know how obviously understanding and loved they are amongst the community, to see people being so generous, Marie.
Mm-hmm. Honest to God, it just was mind-blowing for them, and it's such a great support for them at the end of the day. The community, it just makes you realise you live in a beautiful community, and you really forget that sometimes. It's just, there's lots of other places in the world that this just would not happen, Greg. Mm-hmm. It just would not happen.
Very good point.
And it's just absolutely overwhelming, that the generosity of the people. And the people coming to the door with prayers and holy water, you name it, oils. It's just unbelievable. I think it must be maybe because it's a child, and I think it hits home because obviously everybody has children, and you think, oh my God, that could be me. Because, I mean, realistically, it could be anybody that has children, because, I mean, you're talking about a wee girl that was running about, totally normal, absolutely full of life, full of love, everything. And then now her wee life's just changed. She's going to be upside down because obviously they have to make her very, very sick to make her well, if you understand what I mean.
And for many people like, listening, it'll be a very painful and familiar story because they'll have gone through that themselves. But and I think that in their own words on the GoFundMe page, they know the fight that's ahead of them, but given the level of response and support that they've received, they describe how it gives it'll give them so much hope and courage for the fight ahead. Because obviously you're dealing 100%. With your own emotions, but you're also worried about you're worried about Ruby and how it affects her and her little body and all that kind of stuff. And it's tough, Marie. It really, really is. It's heartbreaking, but hopefully everything goes
okay. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And I mean, at the end of the day, she's an only child. She's our only grandchild. She's just our world here, and she's our Alana and Alana's Nana's her mum, kinda. She's her world as well, obviously, at the end of the day, you know. Like, I mean, she's got a great life because, and the fact she lives here half the week, then she gets fed up with us, she goes down to Alana, you know. So she does have the best of both worlds. She's a great wee girl who's loved by lots and lots and lots of people. And we're just hoping now that in the way ahead, after the 80 days, we're hoping for a wee match. That's all I'm asking anybody to do is pray hard every day, because I do believe that miracles can happen. And I do think a miracle is needed for Ruby because she is so very, very ill at the minute. But look, she was here at the weekend, Greg. She came home from Crumlin and she was able to sit out at the kitchen there, play with Harry and Harley on their iPads, doing Roblox, and that was her wee life. It was normality. The only thing you could see was the wee tube feed that she had, and that's the only difference. Like, we were sitting looking, thinking, this is surreal. Like, I mean, she's totally well, you know?
Doesn't make sense, does it? It just doesn't make sense.
I mean, how can
you, like, go from, you know, a couple of weeks ago, to everything seems perfect to now, and she is perfect, but we just need to rid her of this awful disease.
So basically, at the end of the day, had it not been for the wee squirt on the garage with the exercise, moved the tumour, you know, to hit on a nerve or something, maybe that maybe made her leg a bit, you know, a wee bit sore. But I mean, it was just, I mean, I was taking a wee video of them when they were out there, and I was just laughing to myself, thinking, oh, God, am I going to have to do this now every time I'm looking to go on a treadmill? There's three coming after me looking for a shot. You know the way? But please, God, now, like, we are very hopeful. And, I mean, the treatment that she got in Letterkenny Hospital was second to none. And in Crumlin, and, I mean, when you go to Crumlin, oh, my God, you do get your eyes open. You're not the only one. And it's just, you know, you hear of all these charities and things, you couldn't give enough to them.
Yeah.
You couldn't give enough to charities. And to think what people, you think you're on your own, but my God, when you go to Crumlin, it's an eye-opener. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And they're just amazing. And where she is in St. John's Ward, the beautiful garden that they have, it's spectacular. It's absolutely spectacular, you know. But I just want to thank everybody for the GoFundMe has just gone way over anybody's expectations. And Shawnee and Alana are so, so grateful for that, as are we. And I'm so grateful to everybody who's praying for her, everybody who came to. We had a mass last Wednesday down in Milford for her. And honest to God, it was so comforting for us to see so many people that are there thinking, and the fact that Shawnee and Alana both work in the hospital, they've got a lot of great kind of support there as well, you know, because it's like a big community there. So it's very, very good for them too, you know, that kind of way. So I just want to thank every single person who came with holy oils, everything, you know, like the power of prayer is wonderful too at the end of the day. You know, you think it's your people are losing, but they're not really. It's young ones. I mean, my other son then flew to Medjugorje when he heard it. He went out last Thursday. He'll be back tomorrow. And the whole of Medjugorje is praying for her. And it just so happened there was a kind of pilgrim going out from Letterkenny. So obviously their focus is Team Ruby, basically, you know. So I'm getting feedback from there. There's people in Australia, there's Buddhists praying for us. I don't care who prays for her, as long as they pray for her, you know.
Exactly. Well, we're all praying for her and the family as well, because everyone's going to need to have tons of strength for this journey, which ultimately we hope is a huge success. Give our love to everyone, especially Ruby, of course, Marie. And if people want to donate to support Mum and Dad, Shawnee and Alana, they can search GoFundMe.com, and it's called Ruby's Fight for Life. We're going to link that on our social medias as well. And I know there's already been a fantastic response, but I also know the fantastic people listening that may not have been familiar with this story will want to help the family out at this time. For now, Marie, thank you so much for, I suppose, letting us get to know Ruby as well, too. She sounds like a cracking wee girl. Go ahead.
Hopefully someday she can come up and meet you all.
Well, we'll certainly pencil that in or pen it in, and we'll make that happen. All right, Marie, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, lovely.
Love to
Thank
all.
You very
Take
much,
care.
Dave.
Bye-bye.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Okay, that is Marie Houston there, Ruby's granny, or one of Ruby's grannies. And if you want to donate to that fundraiser, GoFundMe.com, and it's Ruby's Fight for Life. So I just Googled Ruby's Fight for Life and GoFundMe, and it came up there. But also you can go onto our social media. We'll link it there too if you want to donate that way. And as I say, the next 80 days, a big 80 days for Ruby and her family. So I'm sure everyone inclined to pray or meditate or whatever you do, we can all do that and make that miracle happen. Catherine Noon, former Fine Gael senator, of course, and regular contributor to the Friday panel, resident in Farn Village, joins us now. Good morning, Catherine. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Nice to chat to you on such a lovely morning and hear a nice weather forecast for
Isn't
you.
It gorgeous. Yeah, we're both looking out windows rather than our screens. Right, OK, so you are amongst residents in Farn calling on the council to implement measures, really, I suppose, to try and reduce the through traffic in Farn. What's it like?
Well, as a resident, I'd have to say it's pretty bad. We recently set up a residents association in the village and had a great attendance at our first meeting, and we have a committee now. And, you know, there are a lot of smaller issues, but the one major issue was the volume of traffic going through the village and the speed of it and how to manage that. I mean, I don't think there's much that can be done about the volume, because it's just a geographical reality of the lay of the land. But certainly Fawn, when you drive into it, it doesn't necessarily feel like a village in the way that some other villages might. Do you know, there's no centre to the village as such. The marina would be kind of more the centre in a way, and that's off the main road. And it's mainly houses either side.
Yeah.
So,
and there are other, Dunkaneely springs to mind, you know, Lahey. There are all the villages like that. You drive through them and there's no roundabout or such, or no natural centre.
Oh, exactly. And there's no calming measure coming in either side of the village. And the volume, I know myself from being on the road, you go out onto the road and if you're doing the speed limit, which is less 60 kilometres an hour, you know, trucks and stuff come right up behind you as though you're slowing them down. Mm. You know? And I think the residents probably try to slow the traffic down because we go at the speed, and I'm sure a lot of people do. But I did meet with the council a couple of weeks ago. I met with one of their engineers, and he was very helpful and had a lot of ideas around what we might do to, and we had ideas ourselves, which I shared with him. And he was very amenable to doing certain small things in the short term that could help, and then looking at it more long term to try and find solutions.
But which normally means that you have to try and get the TII to do some sort of a study, and then that study has to plug into what they see as a problem, and often it doesn't, and it takes years and years and years. There is a review of speed limits ongoing. Maybe that's an opportunity, but also people have to be aware that it's a built-up area and adhere to those speed limits. So more signage, public crossings,
calming measures, you know, and even just nice, you know, welcome to Fawn and stuff that makes it feel more like a village. So subconsciously, people are more inclined to slow down. And it's a fair comment that the engineer made to me was that, you know, there is a speeding problem nationally. Mm. And I don't think those who speed look at the speed limit and think, oh, I better slow down. You know, that's a national national problem that people are going to speed or going to speed. But certainly in terms of a village like ours, there's a lot that we can do to, you know, there's a lot that the council can do, quite
But there's
frankly.
Also an awful lot the Gardaí can do. Like a local superintendent could decide to focus on Fawn Village for a month and have a patrol car there occasionally checking speed. So, you know, I don't think we can just throw our hands up and say, and I'm not saying you are saying this, Catherine, there's no solution to this. But I would love to see some of those Garda resources, as stretched as they are sometimes, targeted to try and change driver behaviour.
100%. God, I hope I didn't give the impression that we should just accept speed. You know, quite the contrary. But I suppose really what we can do as a residents association, we can call upon and join the national conversation about trying to get people to slow down. But we can also more practically put in measures that will actually have the effect of making people feel like they're actually coming into a village where there are residents living either side. We're trying to get out of our driveways. We want to go for a walk. It can take like a good few minutes to get the chance to cross the road with the sheer volume of traffic and the speed of it. And look, children are taking their lives into their own hands, you know, and parents, I think, would be very reluctant to let a kids of a certain age cross the road on their own, you know, which they might in another place. So just calming measures and something to just slow the volume. And, you know, people who are listening to this, who live, you know, near Fawn, who come through it all the time, just bear in mind that there are a lot of locals that actually find it a challenge, the traffic going through Fawn, the speed of it and the volume, you know.
And I think it's nice to see something done. Like, say, for instance, I'd be a big fan, and I think they're quite effective, of these digital signs. They're normally operated by solar, but they do check the speed of traffic and they flash and ask you to slow down. You know,
they are very effective. Yeah. They are very effective, I must say, because there's a part of me that wants to be obedient. And, you know, you might be slightly over, but when you see it going green, you feel, OK, that's good. You know, so that and just having those flashing lights and a narrowing of the road at the entrance and a nice sign to say, you know, welcome to our village. Please,
you're now entering Fawn Village. Please drive with care, or whatever it might be.
And also the littering. You know, that's another day's work, Greg. But like, it's like people are coming from Derry or Buncrana, and they just get to Fawn and they decide they just clear out their ashtrays or turf stuff out the window. I just can't relate to that. Do you know? So we're going to have to put up some signs saying, listen, please don't litter our village, which people still will do. But we've started doing cleanup days and, you know, there's a nice village spirit and we're trying to harness that and just do a bit more to make our village safer and nicer to live in.
Yeah. In your meeting with the council then and the engineer, are you confident that some things are going to be done in that?
Very confident from chatting to him, and I must touch base with him again now. I gave him a long list of homework. So there were other smaller issues around, and he was extremely amenable and had lots of positive suggestions and took all of our feedback on board and was, you know, wasn't trying to say, which I had spoken to somebody in the council before, oh, there isn't a speeding problem in Fawn. You know, we put guards there, or the guards were there a few days. He actually acknowledged and accepted that speed is an issue in Fawn and was willing to help us put steps in place.
I can't remember exactly which village it was now, but they got hold of a speed gun. I don't know how they managed to do that. And they actually did their own survey on traffic. It was really effective because it laid bare the reality, because, you know, lots of stuff can be anecdotal or what it feels like, but they were able to say such and such an amount of traffic exceeded the speed limit on any given day, you know, and it's
that's really helpful. And once you have the stats, you have that to back up your argument, even though you know it. You know that that's the reality. But there have been lots of crashes in Fawn as well, and a lot of the time they're single car and they don't get reported.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that we must do is, you know, when we see a single car incident, that we should report it. So there's a risk of that.
Right, we'll stay on top of it as well. Listen, thanks for giving us a heads up. And if anyone in the area wants to contribute more, let us know. Thanks very much, Catherine. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Catherine Noon there, who is a former Fine Gael senator, but now a resident of Fawn. 086 60 25,000. If you're in that area or have a view on that, or maybe you've a concern in your own area, please let us know. It's kind of interesting, though, up and down the country you have people resisting, you know, reduced traffic speeds, limits and changes to roads to try and encourage active travel and all that kind of stuff, and yet often in little villages and towns around Donegal, we're fighting for something to be done to try and make it a more evenly shared space. like in Farn, for an example, but it's just the way it is. Right, as I say, if you're in Farn or travel through Farn, let us know. I often feel sometimes too where you find lots of litter, it often can coincide with its proximity to a takeaway. You would find that people eat a takeaway whilst driving, get to a certain point, and often it's the same point, and chuck it out the window. You see that out of Letterkenny in certain places, or out of Donegal Town, I've seen that as well, and they become little litter black spots. Right, just before we take a break for the news and the obituaries, I want to let you know how you can enter our competition today. We've got a €200 voucher for Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Moville. And this week, we're actually asking you to do a little bit of a word jumble. Our word today is Archie, A-R-C-H-I. Can you rearrange those letters to come up with a very common household item? A-R-C-H-I. And these items, broadly available, of course, in Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Moville. Once you've worked it out, text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000, and you will be entered into that competition. And we'll have a random draw just before the end of the show, and we'll have our third voucher of the week given away at that point. OK, it is the 9 till noon show. Stay right where you are. We're going to take a break for the news and the obituary notices, and then we'll be right back.